from the trenches. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to From the Trenches, real life in the accounting industry. We are brought to you by BGL, Australia's number one corporate compliance and superannuation software. My name is David Boyer from SQL CFO, coming to you live from sunny Brisbane. And I am joined by me mate, Paul Meisner, who is still skiing Great White. Paul, welcome back.
Thank you very much, David. Listeners, everyone, lovely day. Skiing today, David, 25K, I think, today in the legs, did all right, but the show goes very happy today. Let's get into it, David, to in-depth episode, in-depth topic for today, later in the show, obviously, after best and worst on ground. Why get a mentor? Mentoring, there's a lot going on, David, in this space, a lot of new entrants in the marketplace. I know CA did a big push on mentoring over the last couple of years. David, you've dabbled in it. I've dabbled in it. What we want to do is just talk about, I suppose, our experience on what we think mentoring should be and has been for us and throw some points around that, because certainly I think it's something that's becoming a bit more prevalent.
Agree. I attribute mentors for a lot of my personal growth, and indeed within our franchise network, I think our franchisees say that the mentoring they get from us is probably one of the major benefits that we offer them. But mate, let's get started. What have you got for best on ground?
Oh, best on ground. Let's have a look. Federal government in the news, as I just find my thing because you threw to me early, which is fine. The Australian government, the Morrison government, is looking to nationalise the superannuation industry. Superannuation largely controlled by union-backed super funds and banks, obviously. With all the Royal Commission, there's a lot of cover now to sort of start to say, well, look, if you guys aren't going to do superannuation properly, let's have a look. This could be, and this is why for me it's in best on ground. I think it'd be an absolute move. And I don't know whether the political climate's there, especially with the Labor Party being quite union-backed. But certainly the New Zealand system where they have KiwiSaver, I think it's called. Just imagine, David, that they're thinking of taking or creating an option for you to have your very, you know, low balance super or your superannuation invested with the government and managed by the Future Fund, who look perform quite well in up markets and down markets. Clearly coming out of the Royal Commission, a lot of people with very low multiple superannuation accounts with the super funds gouging fees. I think that this would be an absolute beautiful thing for two reasons. One is obviously lower the fees on these low margin, on these low value accounts. But more importantly, David, small business red tape, something I am massive on. Imagine if this would just be one payment of superannuation straight to the government. You don't have to make, you know, 30 different payments to all your employees. This could be a real boon.
One of the knock-on benefits of this, which could be really interesting, the main reason for it, aside from, you know, us as the users of super funds, is that our super fund system is actually expensive because you've got over 200 funds. They all pay rent. They've all got expensive payrolls. And so the fees and charges are actually really expensive in Australia compared to other countries. So if they do nationalise it, those costs are going to go down, which theoretically means a lot of really good talent is going to hit the marketplace coming out of super funds. This is good for fintechs and alternative lenders, alternative investment managers who are potentially going to get access to a lot of staff who aren't needed anymore in one big fund.
It would be amazing, David. It really would. It would. I think it'd do a lot of good. Anyway, moving on. I'm going to move on. Robot Hotel loses love for robots. Robots, David, are losing their jobs. There you go. Not taking our jobs. Robots are getting sacked. There is a Japanese hotel that staffed, I believe, entirely by robots, David. Anyway, very funny story, only because I love it when robots getting in trouble. But there's human-looking robots, apparently, at the front desk. But in the room, there's sort of more your Alexia or Google Home kind of robots in the room there, obviously listening and ready for your every whim. There was a gentleman who was staying the night at this hotel, David, and this robot kept waking him up saying, "I'm sorry, I can't understand that request. I'm sorry, I can't understand that request." Turns out that the bloke snoring, the robot thought it was being asked a question while the guy was snoring. Kept waking him up, David, the entire night, and the guy goes, for crying out loud, like, "Just let me sleep." Anyway, I just love it.
Yeah, well, but then again, now he knows what his wife feels like. She's the one getting interrupted by his snoring all the time. Now the robot can't, you know, I think the whole robots are going to take over jobs thing in the purest sense, I reckon that's done and dusted. Like, you've got Toyota retooled their process line and found that it's more efficient having robots work with humans rather than standalone robots. Tesla did the same thing. Like, you know, in Elon Musk had a massive fall on his sword on taking out the number of robots that were in the Tesla supply chain. This is a funny example of it, but yeah, mate, I feel sorry for his wife. If he wakes up a robot, imagine how she feels.
True. Very true, David. Very true. But anyway, it's just really interesting how that happens. David, what's yours?
I got heaps, mate.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
Vegans get typecast and they kind of – that's it. Vegans get typecast because, you know, the joke is so true. How do you find it out if somebody's a vegan? They tell you. There is a new trend where veganism, the ultimate of the new liberal save the world, heal the world lifestyle, has met with the ultimate form of capitalism in the form of a new ETF that only invests in vegan-friendly stocks. An ETF, an exchange-traded fund, is sort of like a managed fund that you can buy shares in and trade on a liquid stock exchange. So the new vegan ETF has been filed. It's run by three finance people out of Europe who, in inverted commas, Paul, identify as vegan. I'll probably get in trouble for saying that about someone. They invest according to vegan and environmental criteria. And as an investor, you can now go invest in a vegan-friendly fund. Why on earth would you want to do it? Well, number one, hopefully it gets better returns. But number two, how's this for a call to action or sort of like measuring impact? The fund says that for every $1,000 you invest with them, 13 animals are saved. I have no idea how they measured that, but that is a fascinating claim. The next thing that's amazing about this, anyone who lives a vegan lifestyle will tell you how expensive it is to be vegan. This fund is damn expensive. The average fee for a socially conscious fund is 0.44%. Theirs is 0.6%. It's just expensive to be vegan, unless you live off Lord of the Fries burgers, which probably isn't that good for you, although they are quite tasty as far as vegan food goes.
They're expensive too, aren't they? There's one down the road from the office.
No.
I mean, that is interesting, David.
$8 a burger? That's not that expensive.
And I suppose, look, is this just another version of niching, I suppose? You know, you have a niche fund, some people... I think in the past we have seen this with more ethical investments, and certainly in a climate change. I believe there are, and I don't know, I can't remember, but I do believe there are funds that are sort of climate ethical in terms of if you hold those beliefs, and I'm sure there are religious funds, David, that back religious stocks. So I don't. I think this is just. Another one, but it is interesting where it is a food preference.
You've also got this trend where there's an article in I think The Australian this week talking about how millennials are choosing to invest their funds differently. So they do care about this stuff. They know that their cash and their investment has power to change, and so they're looking at different investment criteria when sort of choosing what fund they go to. So, yes, it could be niching, but that could be responding to the market. Either way, 13 cows saved per $1,000 invested, Paul. That's one hell of a KPI for a CFO to track. My next best I feel for that person, mate. I don't know how they do it. Right. Now, Paul, my next best on ground. I was having a look back on Twitter because I got told that my Twitter game isn't very good. So, listeners, start talking. Follow me on Twitter, @David Boyer. Apparently it needs to be improved. I was looking back at my past tweets. I sort of agree with them, but a tweet stood out for me from a year ago. About a year ago today is when I came home from work for the first time to be greeted by my daughter. Beautiful day, you know, in the history of a working dad. And in the tweet, I actually hashtagged Bitcoin because that's how big Bitcoin was a year ago. A year later, it isn't. And McKinsey, the global consulting giant, has come out with a report to say that it slams crypto and blockchain is an understatement. It is completely dismissive of the technology. It basically says it has not gotten out of its pioneering stage. I'm going to issue some quotes here. Unstable, expensive, and complex. It is also unregulated and selectively distrusted. That's one of the more complimentary lines that McKinsey has said about it. It also comes out and says that for the millions of dollars invested and the millions of headlines received, it hasn't produced any proven business outcome or business model. This is interesting, Paul, because McKinsey is not a blogger writing from his mother's basement. They set trends. They have a real say in what happens at the big end of town, like the real, real big end of town. And they have just torn the technology apart. Obviously, Bitcoin firms and crypto firms and blockchain firms have come out and argued the report. And some people have actually conceded with the points. But we've said previously, Paul, if crypto was so good, the MasterCards and Visas of the world would have jumped on it already. If blockchain was so good, they would have done it already because they have a track record of adopting new technology that benefits them. It hasn't happened, Paul. You would have loved reading this report.
I did. I caught it a little bit later than you, David, but certainly reading through this, yeah, you're right. This isn't an internet blogger just having a crack because they didn't get in on the wave. We spoke about this previously.
Where's my Lamborghini? I'll blog saying it's all crap.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Look, I think I do have two points of view on this. We spoke about it in an episode late last year, I think, David, about how blockchain in its first 10 years had really failed to hit anywhere near the adoption levels that radio, TV, laptop, iPhone, all that kind of stuff hit. All of those devices or innovations being an absolute straight line up over their first 10 years. Blockchain has really failed in that and certainly has never got over that hump. And I agree with you largely to the pace. I mean, you know, basically PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, if they had jumped on, that would have, you know, they kind of would have been the tipping point. Or any of the banks. Clearly, that didn't happen. Having said that, though, look, I have had it, and we'll get Chris Hooper on the show for an interview. I did sit down with him just before Christmas, and I said, mate, like, I get enough of it to be dangerous, but I really don't kind of think. I think it's all just hot air, and he was very good at articulating where this could go, and also very cognizant that there is a long way to get there. But if it ever gets there, it enlightened me, so we're going to have him on the show so that he can share that with the listeners.
We've got an interview lined up with Chris, but let's pass back to one of your other best on grounds that you didn't mention, because Chris did a really interesting post on LinkedIn about firm brand equity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so thanks for reminding me because I did miss it. And look, there was, read the article, the link will be in the show notes. What to me is it was a great articulation of three different types of media, and I put the word marketing in that as well, is paid, owned, and earned. I think, especially in small accounting firms, we're often spoken about the paid. We don't often, you know, whether it's paying a marketing consultant, no shortage of them, UK especially, but it's your own channels, your website, your social media accounts, and those of your team, and your earned. You know, this is probably where we've seen that the biggest of this is the awards that have sprung up, David. Getting comments in publications like BAWAFR, that kind of stuff, Accountants Daily, if you have to, that kind of stuff. I mean, I think for small accounting, I thought you'd miss that, for small accounting firms,
Know why you started with them. They've got 30,000 people in their audience that are all accountants and they're desperate for people to comment.
Yeah, Fox News has the same listenership for now. But anyway, I think getting back on topic before we get really into trouble, I think not enough small accounting firms focus on that, their own channels and their earned channels. You know, get out. Yeah. that you put yourself out there for comment, certainly share the content that you have anyway. We are doing tax every day. We see tax, not loopholes, but opportunities every single day. Get it out there, educate people. And the most important thing for me is it's free. I started my firm with absolutely no money, no investment in marketing, no nothing. And
how'd you pay for the combi van?
And did all right. Ryan did, my old
business. We should do a bit.
But that was when we were a little more down the track. But certainly I didn't need it there.
That's how I, well.
Does that lead into my...
Well, no, because that...
Sorry, go.
Well, that's how I found out about you. I remember opening like a Acuity magazine or something and seeing this bloke in a combi van by the beach. That's like, Paul Meisner, I want to be like him.
It was good marketing. Anyway. That did probably cost us more than we needed to. But it got us the BRW article, which, does, I mean, arguably so. It's kind of like, I guess it's a little chicken and the egg. Was it paid marketing? Yeah. We sort of earned it, but we earned it by paying for a van. It was kind of one of those things. But certainly it was very good for us, more because of the BRW article than actually having the combi.
Yeah.
There's no point having a combi unless people know about it and we got it out on our channels. So anyway.
My final best on ground, Receipt Bank have come out with a really interesting promotion. It is the most gamified customer loyalty program I've seen in the accounting industry, and they've absolutely nailed it, in my opinion. They've got a retreat, Receipt Bank Exchange, which is in Hamilton Island, one of the islands off Queensland, for their Receipt Bank supporters. And this is on the back of last year, their competitor Expensify. Was it Expensify? To this like huge retreat in the Maldives.
Yes, I think so.
And invited all, you know, all the names that you know, the influencers, the high profile people, their biggest customers, to what was a pretty exclusive event and had some really exclusive speakers there. But Receipt Bank, though, have completely opened it up. Anyone can go at this. You just have to be a bit loyal to Receipt Bank, and I love it. So Receipt Bank have in the background Orange Select, which is there, and I'm a part of Orange Select, where they've just got people in there. I actually haven't done much in it for a while. It's sort of like their loyalty program where they get people who are fans of Receipt Bank and they incentivize them and reward them to talk about them and pass it on to, you know, get their clients converted, that sort of stuff. The extension of that is this. Now, to qualify for a Receipt Bank Exchange, this is so smart, mate. You either need to pay for your firm subscription up front and you get a 20% discount. So if you've got no cash flow problems in your firm, that's a really good option. That may lock you into some certain levels of subscription in case you have clients leave, but you can go into the detail later. You need to recommend 15 of your accounting friends to Receipt Bank, of which one needs to sign up their firm to Receipt Bank, or you need to earn 100 Receipt Bank points or tokens, and they've got some system of measuring how you earn Receipt Bank tokens. Gamification is like this really cool thing, and it sounds amazing because it's like it's the modern version of the incentive program. I've never seen it executed as well as what Receipt Bank's done here to drive loyalty and reward the people who are rewarding them as customers. What I'm Receipt Bank, I really love it.
Interesting. What I love about it, David, is the transparency. I think that just having the it not being this who you know exclusive. It's like it if you're a suburban firm, if you're a regional firm, if you're anywhere, it doesn't matter. There's not this, I guess, click.
Mm.
Plus, it's something that rewards the behaviour that drives their metrics. They're not just hoping to splash a whole lot of cash a la Bora Bora and go down the influencer marketing and hope that it, you know, they'll probably get that off the back of it anyway.
Mm.
Because I'm sure there'll be people who, you know, are there for their influencer quality or have that influencer ability as well as being earning the requisite points. But love the transparency, Dave. You know, it's here it is, here it is, it's open. We'll give you time to do it and... If you qualify, you come. I really like it.
Now, Paul, we are spending more time this year in the quality of our show notes. Listeners, we're sorry we didn't do it that much last year. We're running four or five businesses each. We weren't great at it. Check fromthetrenches.com.au. You've got all the links to our show. There's a link to the Receipt Bank video where the new general manager, Luis Sanchez, who's come from Intuit, explains what this program is. But if you want to be first to get it, sign up to our newsletter on fromthetrenches.com and we will email you the show notes and a few other bits and pieces so you can actually engage with the stuff we talk about on this show. Paul, what's next?
Worst on ground, I presume, David, is that in the running order? I think we've run out of all of our bests. Let me start.
Usually what happens.
That's the order. Been that for a while, 3 years, two and three quarter years. I want to lead in just on the. We're talking about marketing a bit. We're talking about the Chris Hooper article about paid marketing. I'm just not a fan of paid marketing. I will prefix this with four small accounting firms. You know, as I've always said, most accounting firms are small or micro, so I'm talking about them. There was an article by, and I'm just trying to pull it up, about seven biggest mistakes. This was in accountingtoday.com, the American version, the seven biggest mistakes among accounting firm startups. So the reason I prefix it with small firms is a startup is a small firm, David. You don't go straight into a massive size when you're a startup. For me, it was just written by somebody who just sells marketing. Surprise, surprise. Point number one was that it was undercapitalized. And point number two was you're clueless about marketing. Why don't you pay a marketing person? Now, for me, David, I have actually created an accounting startup and have advised people for the last 2.5 years about starting up accounting firms. You don't need to capitalize. In this day and age with technology, pay by the month and word of mouth and referrals, you do not need to be capitalized. This isn't old school where you need to buy, sign a 3-year lease, buy a server, all that kind of stuff. You can literally, it happening every day. You start up, you grab a laptop and your accounting firm is going and you watch every penny. You don't need to do that. And I did not pay $1 for marketing, David, ever, and did not need to. I just think these articles, and I understand why it is, that they're flogging a service, that's fine. The rest of the points, like if he had gone from 3 to 7, then that's good content, David. But it's just for me that it started with number one, which was, oh, you need to stockpile money, and number two was you need to give that money to me. I just think it's, marketing people being marketing people, David.
I don't know if this article's that bad. I'll be honest. I don't think he's saying necessarily go spend money with me. He's just saying be aware of marketing. And even if it is network marketing and referral-based marketing, mate, a lot of people don't know how to do that. Like they really, really don't. I mean, most people who start can go out and get the individual tax returns from the family barbecue on a Sunday, and then that dries up really quickly, and they're sort of left with not much else. I'm not so sure about that. The concept of capitalization, to me, there are almost no startup costs for an accounting firm. Your biggest expense is your public practicing certificate. Go work in a co-working space for, $500 a month. If you haven't got a place to work in your office, go work in cafes if you can. I can't really do that anymore. I lose focus when I'm in cafes these days. Although I have worked from beaches and I will check emails and do bits and pieces in cafes, but real work I can't do there anymore. The capitalization bit for me is about having enough runway to fund your living costs whilst you're building your revenue. So, because there isn't just a lot of expenses in the business. So, yeah. I think that's the bit that needs to be planned and well worked out. But you got your insurance, which is, you can even get that funded now from Macquarie Funding. You can get your PI insurance for a small firm for less than $100 a month. Pretty stock standard, right?
Yep.
You go get your public practicing certificate, which is probably going to cost you around $3,000 plus 4 or 5 days of your time, probably. But you don't have any clients, so you don't really have an opportunity cost on your time. And Xero is going to set up your practice management software for free.
Absolutely. It should be, it is super cheap at the moment. You shouldn't have to capitalize. Interestingly enough, David, though, on that capitalization, and I agree with you, that was the one thing I capitalized, was I capitalized my first 3 months, wage, and I sort of use that in inverted commas, my first 3 months drawings. So I just wanted to say that if I had, I was living with my partner now, wife, still wanted to maintain the bills. So I basically just took money out of my home loan and said, okay, here's my first 3 months' wage. And I actually didn't touch it.
Yeah.
By the third month, the revenue was up there. So interesting. Look, marketing will be marketing. The other thing for me is, failure to differentiate your services from a person who, largely judging by their website and everything else, just does the same thing that a whole lot of other marketing people are doing. which is kind of ironic. But, you know, that always interests me. I got one more, and I'm going to put this in a this could be worst on ground next week. I'm going to just going to put it forward and just say this is interesting. Or in the coming weeks, Zero have released a couple of days ago just an update to say that they are moving their support away from the generic email address that we've been used to into the much maligned and very slow to start Zero Central, which is their supposed smart support website. This is the one, David, that I broke because they geolocated so well that when I was in Greece, I couldn't see any of the help content. Even though I was logged in, it couldn't recognize that I was an Australian user, just happened to be sitting in Greece. It thought that I was a Grecian trying to look up Zero, which was a bit disappointing. And Zero Central, when you ask it some of the questions, you kind of just, some of the answers you get have nothing to do with what you type in. I know it's AI, I know it has to learn, but geez, it's starting from a very low base. So they copped a lot for not having phone support, which I never minded because the email was so good. I think transitioning from email to this, you have to go to that website, you have to log a case. If it takes it out of the app, I don't know, David. I'm putting a pin in it and saying this could be just getting further away from the customer when they, you know, in an effort to get closer to the customer. If you break that user experience and make it just a little bit harder to do something, I don't know. It could be bad.
So we've got this as a potential, as we don't know yet. Listeners, if you're using it and experiences, get in touch with Paul at @PaulMeisner_ on Twitter or at @DavidBoyer on Twitter. I use HubSpot quite a lot. The HubSpot don't have email support. It's all you need to click on the help button, but the help button's in app. On every page, you've got help on the bottom right. You can ask the community contact support, and contact support's chat, or I can book a phone call and it comes back to me. HubSpot support is outstanding, absolutely brilliant. So if that's where Zero's looking towards, I'll give, you know, they can have a few months grace before they get there. But listeners, let us know what you think as you navigate this new world of Zero help.
Absolutely. David, go on. Unleash the beast.
Yes. Righto. We're going to talk about software companies today. Carbon has announced that they are now available to not just accounting firms, to everyone who needs workflow management. And I'm putting this in worse because did Carbon ever have anything that was uniquely special for accounting firms? It never integrated with Xero. I don't know about the integration with QuickBooks Manager. Do they have an integration with QuickBooks? Do you know, Paul?
Don't know. Sure.
They've got an integration with Practice Ignition now, which is a new thing that they're using. But there are literally thousands of workflow management tools out there. Like, it is one of the most, like, everyone's trying to solve work problems. And Carbon expanding out now, I sat down and asked, because we use Carbon, we still use it, our franchisees still use it. Our head office has just moved back to Asana because my wife started working with us 2 days a week and she's an Asana expert. So we just tap the knowledge, no other reason than that. What is it about Carbon which makes it particularly special for accounting firms if presumably without any additional development, it doesn't look like there's any new features, everyone's now able to access it? And if that's the case then accounting firms should be looking at all other types of workflow solutions, not just Carbon, because Carbon's a bit exy, mate. It's not the cheapest product out there. So I just think it's one of those ones where a company's gone after the accounting segment, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, have anything that's that specific for what accountants do. At the end of the day, we're just a knowledge-based professional service business. So are digital marketers, so are law firms. They've got a bit of regulation about their workflows and files that need to keep it a little bit different. So are architectural firms, and this software is becoming increasingly generic. And if that's the case, then it's a race for the bottom of price because they're all going to have roughly similar features.
You're right. I think the accounting market, if you niche, and again, I mean, I don't mean to heap on the marketing, but, you know, Carbon's marketing has been some of the most, it's really targeted in on that accountants must niche. And then Carbon are now just undoing their niche royally. You know, that for me is quite interesting. I think the you know, the size of the market in accounting, there were just, I think the sheer volume of the fact that most accounting firms are quite small really limited the availability of carbon. Everyone I speak to, though, who uses it absolutely raves about it. I know, you know, you've spoken, spoken about it.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, it is, and I haven't used it. We're just simply too small for it. But people who have used it do rave about it. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see, you know, I guess my point, now I've seen this in a lot of other software, namely when Xero went sort of from New Zealand and Australia into the US, it basically put a three-year dev hold on any localized functionality of the Australian product. So I think the struggle, you know, for carbon here is then now, yes, for most professional services, I think professional services are quite similar, but does all of their time and effort, or does a lot of their time and effort now go into building the templated packs now for architects and lawyers and whoever else they're going after? You know, do the poor old accounting firm users now not see any benefit or not see any improvement? That's the concern for all software companies, I think, and all of them go through this when they expand either geographically or in an industry.
And good on Carbon for expanding. Like, there's nothing, if that increases their sales, if that's better for the best decision for their company, do it. But our audience, accountants, is this software specific for you, or is it just the one that's marketed to me the most, which we are huge on this show? Anyway,
there is a lot of other competition out there. If you become a generic workflow management app, you know, you were saying that Asana, you know, you can just forward every single email into Asana. And you look at the price point. Clearly, it's not as, you know, it's not as flash or not as detailed. You don't have those work templates, etc. But I mean, I think you can build them in Asana. So with a bit of extra work, though, but you look at the price point of something that you arguably just cobbled together versus Carbon, which, as you said, is quite expensive. I don't know. Does it make it special anymore for accountants?
My next worst on ground, Paul. You and I go to a lot of events. We're a little bit plugged into the ecosystem, and we go to some of these events that are really expensive to have stalls at, and we think, geez, how many sign-ups do you need to get return on investment? And some Australian companies are brilliant. I saw this when I went to Singapore. The Australian companies are so much better with their sales processes at events than some of the other countries. But there is a risk that of the 700-odd apps in the Xero marketplace, most of these are startups. Not all of them are going to survive. And I think the writing's on the wall for a really popular one, but I'm going to talk about it for a reason in a moment. Asset Guru, one of their former employees, reached out to me to tell me the experience that they had there and didn't tell me much, but referred me to Glassdoor. Glassdoor is a website where employees rate the employers. Now, it's very easy to say this is a disgruntled employee, but the news out of Asset Guru, which is a fixed asset register, is that most of the staff were made redundant in the days leading up to Christmas, which is no good for the employees. But the company has been slammed by four employees on Glassdoor, mate. Pros, there are none. This plays as a joke. Cons, I'm reading off the website, so this isn't my opinion. No business plan or clear strategy from the beginning. Management continued to lack direction despite seeking advice. Never took it on board. Management continued to hire or retain staff not well suited for their role, even though the business was literally at the point was failing. Management was in denial about the trajectory of the business. Mate, absolutely slammed it. Not good for the employees, not good for the ecosystem to have a failure for, I think Asset Guru was pretty prominent about a year and a half ago. I saw it quite over the place. Advice to management from this staff member: close the business and never run one again because you're a poor leader.
I just read that. That was ouch.
And easy to say to disgruntled employee sacked before Christmas, but if you're sacking people before Christmas, there's probably some endemic problems in the business because nobody wants to be doing that. No one who employs people, and I'm an employer, wants to be doing that before Christmas.
Interesting that your two stories that followed each other may have had similarities in that area, but I won't say anymore.
You sure?
Right. No. Right. In depth. Have we covered everything? I think we have.
You haven't said much about this Glassdoor review. You just had a bit of a laugh.
No, look, I think reviews are hard to read. You don't know who's read them.
Yeah.
And largely, I take it with a grain of salt. You look at restaurant reviews and stuff. I mean, I think there's a lot of keyboard warriors. Certainly, if that's the case, it'll sort of come to light within 6 months to a year. It'd be interesting to look back and see. Whether Asset Guru
recovers.
If it started with the staff, then you almost guarantee that some of that filters out to customers.
Yeah.
Well, any Asset Guru customers out there? Anyone know the company or a client? You see any downturn or upturn? Then let us know.
Right, in depth.
Absolutely. David, you tell us about your journey with mentoring.
Well, I was inspired for this topic while I get a mentor. Jason Robinson, one of the directors at RBK Advisory, Zero Firm of the Year, posted a very honest post on LinkedIn about wellness and how once a quarter he goes to this wellness center and breathing, clean eating, yoga. Yoga not necessarily for me, Paul. Touching my knees is a milestone with these old football injury, mate. But it really did inspire me to think about mentors, both with health and different things. And I've been seeking out mentors since probably my mid-20s, early 20s, so maybe 10 to 15 years. And I get them for different things that are going on in my life, whether they have a skill that I want to acquire, a problem that I need to wrangle, an opportunity that I need to take advantage of, or if I just need some base level consistency because, I'm maybe racing off in a way that I don't actually want to, in a direction that I don't actually want to end up in, at a destination where I don't want to be. So I wanted to talk about mentoring and the cynics out there will say, oh, well, Paul, you've just launched this freedom mentoring site with Wayne and this is just a product pitch for you. And it isn't. I think that mentoring is really, really important. Paul, we will talk about what you're doing with Wayne because I think it's a really good program that you guys have got up and running, and I am.
And you pitched this topic.
David. I pitched this topic to you.
You pitched this topic, yep.
Yeah, and this is also, Wayne has been for the last year, Wayne was one of my mentors. So I'm going to go through three different mentors that I've had and different things. Is that all right, Paul? Should I do that?
Go for it, yeah, lead in.
So I've never really had a wellness mentor. In fact, I've probably battled with, keeping fit over the last 10 years. I actually looked at a photo because there's this 10-year challenge, right, going around on social media where you post a photo of yourself from 10 years ago. Jesus, mate, thick hair, thin. I think I saw some good bicep mass there. But I've always had a spiritual mentor. So I'm anyone who's met me, I wear my little kippah, my yarmulke, I'm a practicing Jew. So I always have like a sort of spiritual mentor in the background, a range of different rabbis and their wives as well, who have helped me with sort of just different ideas that I have or a bit of motivation, a bit of inspiration, and definitely that whole identity thing. Being Jewish is a big part of my identity, and they've really helped me with that. I'm struggling with this at the moment. I'm the president of my synagogue, and so this part of my life has become a bit of a business almost. So that's sort of a challenge for me, and I've got somebody helping me with that. And I think, whether it's your Jace going out on a wellness retreat, these are the things that just help you look after yourself. Like, these are directly linked to mental health for me. And different people will find different people in their lives to help them through the mental health aspect, and you absolutely should get one. And we talk about them on the show pretty often. The next mentor that's been pretty consistent since I started Sequel has been sales mentors. So the first bit of spare cash I had, I went out and spent 10 grand on this guy called Ari Galper, who's a sales coach, and got me to publish a book, and that was going to be our big sales thing. And I've always wanted to learn how to sell. Like, I've always been able to talk, but being able to talk and being able to sell are completely different things. So I've always had a sales mentor in my life because it's a skill that I want to learn. From Ari Galper, I went to Wayne, and I started working with Wayne about 15 months ago. Part of our engagement was that we'd outsourced our sales coaching and designing our sales process to him, and he built a brilliant training program that we use in the business. Where the sales mentoring really came into it was like, and I'll tell you a story. I remember it was one night, it was about 10:30 at night. I'm sitting there looking at our deal flow in HubSpot, and we've got a really big pipeline, but they're not moving through. You know, there's big bottlenecks in the pipeline. I wasn't having a panic attack, but you know, Paul, when you just sit there and you just think, like, why isn't something happening?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I messaged Wayne on WhatsApp. I said, mate, really struggling here. I can't work out where we're at with this. I can't work out how to solve this problem. Can we have a quick chat? And Wayne, admittedly, is 3 hours behind because I think he's in Phuket at the time. So it wasn't that late for him, but I think it was Negroni cocktail time at that point. And he got on the phone and in 10 minutes just talked me through it and calmed me. And I think that is something that mentors offer you. You know, they stop that anxiety building late at night when it's just nonsense. You know, you just need to cut it off.
Yeah, look, and that's where it is. You know, I think people often talk about accountability partners as well, but certainly just, yeah, reassuring you.
And then the final thing for me is I think marketing, as distinct from selling, is a skill that I really want to get better at. I'm a big Seth Godin fan, read This Is Marketing over summer, and this is where mentoring, you know, it doesn't have to be one-on-one mentoring. It doesn't have to be paid mentoring. You know, I paid Jacinta Katniss, who was the global CEO of Boost Juice and is on our advisory board at Sequel, a lot of money to help me transition from being a hands-on accountant to being a business owner, and got a lot of value out of it. But there's so much content online that you can build your own mentoring from that. And Seth Godin's a guy who has thousands of hours of videos and books and all sorts of stuff that you can engage in to learn marketing of him. If your leadership's your topic, go follow Simon Sinek. So I think you can build your network of mentors through personal relationships, through paid mentorships, or through following certain people online and engaging in the tools that they give you.
Yeah, absolutely, David. I think it's certainly, you know, I've always used it in a small sense, just with more friends and associates. You know, I've sort of had that. I've never really formalized a mentoring relationship. I do speak to a lot of people, and I do try to learn off a vast range. But certainly, in the latter half of last year, sharing a co-working space with Cameron Schwab, I spoke about it on last week's show about his work. Certainly, that has helped me think about mentoring in a new way, and the power of it. I think it's really interesting. The three challenges, David, that I've actually always found with mentoring, and one of the reasons that I've never really formalized it. One is that I have a big professional and personal network of people of various skills, and I like that range of views. The time for me has always been an issue, you know, and then certainly one of my New Year's resolutions is to work quite hard on time and saving time and being more efficient in my time. I think by the time, you know, you have to meet, you have to organise, often travel, you know, I think that one of the big challenges for me has always been time. The high cost of mentoring, you know, I don't know, you're basically sort of paying per hour, not that timesheets are dead in some industries, I suppose, David, but because it's a one-on-one thing, and often if you know, to get a good one, someone who's got the right experience, that paying a one-on-one cost is quite inefficient in terms of cost. The other thing for me was it's only ever been one view. I find it hard, and I've always liked the different views. You never know what the biases are of that person, and you never know what their experience was or has been. You know the CV that they want you to know, but you never sort of know necessarily how good they are. The one story about that for me, David, was I had a client who was running his business, struggled a bit. I was trying to give him some advice. We were doing break even. He had multiple parts to the business. Where all his focus was were the non-profitable parts. We broke out all the profit. We did all this. And he was sort of, I guess, lost a bit in his business. And we'd had that conversation. And he had a mentor who was sort of more of a business and personal mentor rather than a financial mentor, which I was sort of helping him with that. And his client got a job opportunity, David. It was a consulting gig in another state. It was going to be full-time but on an absolute heap of money. Like, this was a really attractive day rate. It was going to earn him 50 times more than the business had earned him on average for the last couple of years because the business had struggled. And his mentor, David, said not to do it, said, don't leave your business. Don't leave it. You're just about to break through. You know, we're getting somewhere where, you know, largely pausing the business. He didn't have any major clients that he was going to lose. He was doing web development. There was nothing that couldn't refire this business, but I felt he needed to, basically clear his head, go and earn some cash because the business hadn't earned a lot, you know, but there was a mentor, David, that just basically was trying to save their job and save their mentoring role. And that always stuck with me. I know every mentor's different. Absolutely. But, you know, if you try to have that community focus, how have you seen those three things, David? How do you manage that, the time, the cost, and the one view problem?
I actually really like how you've sorted out that three criteria. That's actually really well done, Paul. You could be a management consultant, mate. If only you could work on your why, you'd be really good at it.
That's handy.
So so what is it? It's how do you manage time that is only comes from one opinion, and what's your other one?
Cost.
Okay, so cost, do a budget and factor. I actually have advisory board as an item in my budget, and that's where I put mentoring costs. So that's the easiest one to manage. But as part of that is also chicken and egg. Like, are you going to invest in learning so that you can grow, or are you not? And if cost is an issue, then go to that model like I was talking about with the how I absorb Seth Godin content. There's a lot out there that you can learn without getting one-on-one stuff. Absolutely. And if that's not the way you learn, find a Facebook group where people are active and sharing stuff. There's certainly a lot in the accounting industry, although I'm not sure there's that. I don't know how good they are about growing your business and personal development, but definitely around accounting type stuff, there's quite a bit out there. In terms of time, again, it's are you going to make a decision? Do I value investing in myself and learning and growing? And where this is hard for accountants is working on the business versus in the business. This is working on the business territory. And perhaps even at the point of that, it's sometimes actually working on yourself. So you need to control your time. And, you know, Paul, you said in your resolution, you said it again today, so I'm going to start holding you accountable to it. It's about doing less so that you have time to do things that you want to do. If you want to do this, you need to be really conscious, and it's hard work because you need to change the way you work, that you're going to build into your week or your month or your quarter time to invest in these sort of relationships. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that is a great way to look at it. So the reason I phrased those challenges, David, is, and as you said at the top of the show, was that I have joined forces with Wayne Schmidt and Sally Schmidt. Obviously, they are the two people that drove co-founded. If they were in the UK, Gary Turner style, they'd call themselves co-founders.
I wasn't going to say no, because you've called yourself co-founder of Freedom Mentoring, but you've been doing it. It's just a rebrand to Freedom Accounting, mate. I think Wayne's jumping on your co-founder bandwagon.
That's all right. No. He's certainly changed it in a great direction. And look, the reason is, so based on this, you know, the time, the cost, and the one view, what we've tried to do, and we've called it Freedom Mentoring, David, it is a reimagined look at mentoring. So what we've done is we've taken Sally's devotion to process management and system management, bundled that with Wayne's, you know, absolute industry leading sales and marketing content and advice and experience, and throwing in with that my practical spirit experience of growing an accounting firm in a digital age, and all of us being digital nomads and remote working. So what we've done, David, is basically with it being online content, you remove that time. You can do it. You can consume the content when you want to. We've reduced the cost because we're using the online content. It's not that one-on-one. It's not only a session or face-to-face. And the only one
I like that,
yeah, look, and certainly
I like that because it embraces different learning styles.
And it's, you know, we've got a learning management system where you can pick the courses. The other thing for me, David, is you sort of have that some courses are you have to fit in with the course content. you know, we spoke about it a little bit with CA. It's like you have to do those five modules or you have to do this 6 weeks. And my old course was a 6 week. But what I really learned was every firm's at a different level. So what we're doing is we're pitching content at every different level. You subscribe to it. You can pick and choose the content. You don't have to listen to content that's not at your level, which hopefully increases that efficiency or that effectiveness of the content. The other thing is we put a community around it. And so not only do you get Sally, Wayne and I and a monthly Q&A webinar, but what you also get is a community of like-minded people where you can crowdsource your answers or your support and build that network. So keep an eye out for it. There is a webinar coming up on the 30th of Jan, Melbourne time. And anyone who wants to jump on and learn a bit more, I would love to see you there. The link will be in the show notes.
Paul, I believe in Wayne's sales coaching enough to have spent a year and a bit of my life with him. And I believe that if you want to build a lifestyle type small practice, I've seen your content. I think it's great. Your content's so good that Change GPS use it in their training programs, don't they?
And Go Proposal. Well.
So it's good stuff. Jump on the webinar. Check it out, guys. We don't often ask a lot of our audience and we don't sell much, but check it out. Paul, that's it for a very long show.
Massive show. There's a lot happening, David. I didn't expect the year to ramp up this quick. Especially being over here and largely being on holidays. But as always, listeners, we love hearing from you. Please hit us up on LinkedIn, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on any of our channels, subscribe via our website. And apart from that, have an awesome week.
See ya.
Thanks again for listening to an episode of From the Trenches. David and I love to hear from listeners, so you can reach out if you've got feedback or story ideas, get in touch. I can be reached on Twitter at @PaulMeissner_ or on LinkedIn, Paul Meissner.
I'm on Twitter at David Boyar, Boyar, on LinkedIn, David Boyar.
From the Trenches.